Welcome back, guys. DGS. Happy Friday. A few minutes past 2 p.m. Sue at 2. Sue Thomas is here from down the hall. How are you?
Is this the thing where I can't hear myself, but you can?
Oh, man. Oh,
yeah, we hear you.
We can
Hold
hear
on.
You.
Going over here.
Hi.
There
Got
you go.
It?
Yep.
Okay. Now we're back.
Mm-hmm.
We were just sort of commiserating. Some people will be super excited. Some people won't give a rat's ass. I don't like that the Chicago Bears are moving to Indiana.
I hate it. Is it going to happen?
It took a big step today. The Bears board of directors voted to proceed with the plan in Hammond, Indiana. And the governor of Indiana welcomed them to the state today. You know, like on Twitter.
Wait, who owns Halas? It's the H family, right?
Well, it's the McCaskey family, but Virginia McCaskey is George Halas's daughter.
Oh, thank you.
So originally the Halas family, and now it's the McCaskey family, yeah.
And wait a minute, who's the board of directors of...
They're all McCaskeys.
Oh.
I guarantee it. I haven't looked, but I'm going to Google it. Now we're talking. I bet you at least half are family members.
Okay. Oh, go ahead, Sue.
I was going to say, why? Is it more money for them? Why would they want to leave Chicago?
Because the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago aren't going to give them the hundreds of millions of dollars that they want, and Indiana will. Same reason the Chiefs are leaving Missouri to go to Kansas. It's the exact same thing. And it's about the same geographic distance. Like, it'll be an inconvenience for fans depending on which side of the city that you live on.
Right.
But in the end, you know, it's not like Rams fans losing their team to California, right? You can still go to the games.
Bless you. Is this a dumb question? Probably. Why is it that the NFL, I guess because cities will just give you the money.
Yes.
But I mean, the NFL is rolling in money.
Yes.
So they're just going to, okay, well, now we're going to have teams in Indiana and for Chicago. I hate it.
Yeah, if you want to know what the NFL is, it might as well be a tech company, because the only thing that matters is more. They don't care about how, they care about more, even though that league is by far the most profitable sports league on the planet.
Yes.
They generate the most revenue, owners get to keep the most money because they make so much, right? I mean, they get the same percentage, owners and players get the same percentage as you would in the NBA. But because the NFL makes so much more money than everybody, owners, nobody loses money in the NFL. It's impossible. You can't.
Okay. Was the mandate then you have to have a new updated place? I mean, does that come from the NFL? Where does that come from? Your stadium has to be
They just want it because it's they'll make more money that way. So a newer stadium means bigger suites, better suites, more money for the high-end tickets and the high-end stuff. And probably fewer low-cost tickets, so you're going to make more money per game. You can have, obviously, other events there, too. You know, in the off-season or in off-weeks, you can play other things there. But, yeah, it's entirely all about money. The stadiums that these teams play in, they may not be pretty if they're older. And Soldier Field has been around for a while.
Yeah,
I know they put
cool.
the spaceship on top of it, you know, 20 years ago, whatever. It looks ridiculous. But, yeah, it's just it's old, so... They want new, and they want new money, and they don't want to put their own money out there to do it.
Why does the NFL make so much more money than, say, the Cardinals when we have 80 home games and they have 8?
TV.
TV.
It's entirely TV contracts. The TV contracts are so big because the ratings. But we do it every year. How many? Every year, when you look at the top 100 rated TV shows in the country, 95 are NFL games.
Okay,
I mean, NFL dominates TV.
No, it does.
And it makes a lot of revenue that way because their TV deals are big. Their corporate partnerships are super lucrative. And the reason for all of that is that football is easy to follow because it's one game a week. You don't have to watch every day. You can one game a week. It's almost always 90% of the time it's on a weekend when you're not working. People gamble on it very easily. So the gambling adds into a lot of the popularity of the sport. And like, practically speaking, it works great on TV.
Yeah,
the action works great on TV because it's short little bits of action. And during the downtime, you look at replays and it makes it feel like something's constantly happening.
And it looks better and better every year. They get better shots. They've got that HD stuff going on. Oh, wait. So if they do go to Indiana, where would it be in Indiana?
Hammond, Indiana. So northwest Indiana. It would be barely across the border.
And they still call it the Chicago Bears?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they're going to call them the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, well, at least
and
they're
call
kind
the
of in
New York Giants and New York Jets play in New Jersey. I mean, that's been the case for 30 plus years.
Oh, maybe that's the
thing they're going by.
Yeah.
I would be really curious to hear from like some loyal season ticket holders of the Chicago Bears. Let's say you live in downtown Chicago.
Yeah.
And you went from, it takes me 15 minutes to get to the game to now it's going to take me an hour and I have to cross state lines.
Ugh.
Like that's such a slap in the face to, because a lot of times it's the same people buying those tickets year after year. And it's like, yeah, your loyalty actually means nothing.
No, they don't care because if those people drop them, somebody else takes them.
It's gross.
You're right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's the way of that sport in particular can do whatever it wants because it's got the most hardcore fans because they have the most revenue to work with. So even if they make people mad in the short term, in 10 years, they're not going to care.
I'm sorry if we've covered this, but they would keep calling them the Chicago Bears.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's,
I mean, the Kansas City Rachel, Chiefs are going to play in Kansas now. They're not playing in Kansas City.
At least the word Kansas is in there somewhere.
Exactly. I get that.
There's nothing Chicago about this.
New York Giants, New York Jets are playing in Jersey. San Francisco 49ers don't play in San Francisco. They play in Santa Clara, California.
Mm.
Not even the same place. If I understand it right, it's like 35 minutes away.
So why do they just keep the name to keep riding on nostalgia?
Yep.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, I don't like it.
You should at least have to take the hit of, we had to do a bit of a rebrand. You should at least have to take that hit.
We're the Hammond, Indiana Bears.
I think that's how we should refer to them on social media from now on. You're the Hammond Bears.
Wow. Sweetness.
You're now the Kansas Chiefs.
Ugh. All right. I didn't realize that was happening so much everywhere else.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, I'm curious to get Chris Ranji's take on this. Major Bears fan.
Well, I'm sure he'll hate it because he's like most of us who understand this issue, and that is, it's a scam.
Yeah.
Why should you, as a wealthy business owner, get taxpayer money?
Yes.
Finance it yourself. You guys make hundreds of millions of dollars a year. The revenue you make in a decade would pay for your stadium.
What is the justification for them receiving taxpayer money? Like, how do people explain it?
Well, here's how they sell it.
Local economy.
They sell it as, the construction is going to be a lot of jobs for a few years. So there's a big benefit. Right. And then it is jobs, right? You have to have stadium employees. You have to have that. Team play. Every team, wherever you play, every player, home and away, is taxed by that city for that game. So when the Rams were here, the Rams would come to St. Louis, the 49ers would come in, both players on both sides, their game checks are taxed by the city.
What a bunch of crap.
So there's all of this stuff going on that's all a part of all of this. Yeah. So,
I mean, I don't feel bad. Players are rich, but
I mean, we pay a tax to work in the city.
Wrong is wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So Indiana will have technically two teams, or at least two stadiums.
Yeah, they're going to have the Indianapolis Colts, and they're going to have the Hammond Bears.
Okay.
Hammond Which is kind of hilarious, right? Like, Chicago has no teams.
So
the
dumb.
State of Indiana has two.
Yep.
With no population to compare.
Weird.
Well, I mean, it's always the money grab.
And what was the meeting today? Okay, we're going to move forward. What's
next? The Bears voted to proceed with the plan in Hammond.
Mm.
And assuming the money comes through, then that's the way that they plan on going. And by the way, I looked up the...
How much?
I looked at the Bears board of directors. So the president of the team is a guy named Kevin Warren. He's on the board. And then it's George McCaskey, Patrick McCaskey, Brian McCaskey, Edward McCaskey, Ed McCaskey Jr., and a guy named Pat Ryan.
Could be McCaskey.
Yeah, yeah. You think they have full control of the board of directors? If you look at almost any sports team, it's a lot like that. You look at the board of directors, it's all family members of ownership. And I think it's probably that way in a lot of businesses, too.
Sure.
Okay, one more question. Why? I get that you want a new stadium because you want to be able to compete with the other new stadiums, but is there anything about Soldier Field that makes it, like, we can't play here. It's unsafe to play here.
It's not unsafe, not unprofitable. It's not as profitable. And look, that is an area that can be tough, right? Parking's not easy there, and it's
True.
Expensive in downtown Chicago.
Yes.
You know, you got McCormick Place right there, and that's where you can park a lot of the time, but it's not a simple, it's not like right, literally right next door. There's a bit of a distance to walk. There are things about that area that aren't great. There's not, you know, it's not like you're right connected to some of the best social areas in Chicago, because that stadium's further south towards McCormick Place, where the good stuff is more downtown and in the loop. So there are,
but this, it's in Chicago.
Because what they're going to do, what they want to do is take Hammond, Indiana, and build the stadium, and then build up all the stuff around it: residences, hotels, restaurants, businesses. They want to do that. It's what's happening in Kansas too.
Yeah,
it's what's happening with the Chiefs. Same thing. Because they want to make these places where people want to live, places where people are going to then become a permanent tax base, which is what their draw is.
I know you're not a business guy, but if you could have advised Kehoe or whoever in Chicago, you know, was making the decisions, would you have advised them, just do what you need to do to keep them?
No. No, big cities have lots of bills to pay. You know, I mean, like, Chicago's got a lot of things to cover. Kansas City's got a lot of things to cover. Why should the taxpayers have to pay for a rich team owner to get richer? I mean, I wouldn't do that. There's the research that's been done on publicly funded stadiums is that the public funding always ends up on the downside. You always lose.
Hmm.
There's the upside they sell you on is not going to match what
Except
it's going to cost
Edward
you.
Jones, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, I mean, like, it's a good example.
Yeah.
That's a good example in that.
If you want to have a convention.
Yeah.
That features weird liminal lighting. Yeah. If you want to do like a Backrooms Live, you can only go to the Jones Dome in St. Louis.
I would be more likely to counsel. I would be more likely to counsel somebody in positions of power to do it for a baseball team, because that's 81 days a year that I have people coming to my city spending money. In football, you have 17 weeks, and it's all one. It's one game a week, so you don't have. Like 6 days of games every other week, like you do in baseball.
Do you think that if the Cardinals were ever...
And even there, it's not going to be a great deal.
...to move Busch Stadium from where it is to the Chesterfield Valley or Sojay or, you know, something similar, do you feel like Cardinals fans would eventually be like, hey, rock on, it's a lot safer,
Eventually,
easier.
People always adapt. Short term, people would be enraged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it would be the end of this city.
Yeah,
period.
Like, I think
it would be the end.
I think that's part of it. And I wouldn't say it just for this city. I do think that's even true of baseball teams in the bigger cities, too, is the constant presence of, let's just call it 20,000 people coming in 81 times a year. And then you can also book the stadium for other things like concerts and things like that, where a football stadium, how many concerts can you put in there to make up for the fact that you're only going to have 9 or 10 home games a year for a football team.
So what's dying then is like the Pittsburgh, where you can go to both downtown. You can see the Steelers over here. You can watch the Pirates over here.
It's not dying, but in some places it's going away.
That's how it was in Kansas City.
You know, an exact opposite example in recent years. It's part of the reason why downtown Detroit has gone bigger and gotten better is they pulled all the teams back. So the Pistons used to play in Auburn Hills, which was 40 minutes away. The Lions used to play in Pontiac, which is 35 minutes away.
They're bringing them all.
And now all of them play right there on the same block. They're all like right downtown.
That's how it should be.
And there's a casino and the Fox Theater and all and restaurant districts and all that stuff. And it's how it kind of like, now you have a year-round draw, but they also have four teams.
This is just great. Now I'm all ramped up about something I really don't care at all about.
Yeah.
I've been to exactly one Chicago game in my whole life. I'll probably never go again. Oh, but I'm so mad. Welcome back, DGS and KMOX. Happy Friday. Which would be worse, learning that your child is being bullied or that your child is a bully?
Oof.
The first one is worse to me. Because I can
mostly because of your haircut.
Because I can easily correct my kid if he's the bully or she's the bully. I can control that, but I can't undo the fear, the damage that's been done by the bully if my kid's been bullied.
What in general would be your approach to your bully kid?
If my kid was pretty hardcore, to be honest with you. Like, first of all, you're going to be clear that you are not doing this anymore. I'm in charge. You're not in charge. And everything you like is now mine until you change your behavior. And if I hear this again, we're going to make it worse. Because you will hate the punishment from me more than you like being a bully.
Good.
I mean, it wouldn't be. You also have to do the thing where you have to like also like talk to your child, right? You have to explain things to them. You have to, you know, like you should be doing those things even if they're not the bully, because then they won't become that. Mm-hmm. But if they are, it's more than just laying down the law. But the number one thing is laying down the law and making sure that the punishments are something that they don't like.
Maybe I'm being way too judgmental of parents I've never met, but I kind of doubt that kids who are really bullies have the greatest parents. It typically seems to be, it's kind of passed down from the parents.
Probably in a lot. I don't know what the percentage is, but I would bet a lot. Or it's a parent that maybe sometimes just gives in to their kid. Like, they wouldn't believe it if somebody told them, like, your kid's the bully. No, he's not. No, he's not.
I could see that, too.
Yeah, I think there's a mix of those things. But, yeah, I mean, it comes from somewhere, right? Like, it comes from somewhere if you're constantly bullying people. Or at least, or even constantly bullying just one person. Yeah. It comes from somewhere.
Were you guys bullied?
I wouldn't say that, no. I had one kid, I don't know, I guess you could call him a short-term tormentor. Because there was a kid that lived behind my house in the first house where we lived. And he was 2 or 3 years older, and he was the mean kid that everybody avoided. Like, he was mean. And he had older brothers, which is why everybody was scared of him, because his older brothers absolutely would kick your ass if you did anything to him. But it wasn't like, it was like a couple times a year that you'd run into him. It wasn't like every day. It wasn't like, I'm going to come get you. It wasn't that, but it was enough to be like, hey, there's Larry. We're going the other direction.
Was it like a Christmas story in the alley?
It's hard to find that direction in South Roxanne.
But I'll tell you this.
I'll tell you that. Everywhere you go, there's
bully. Larry learned a lesson when we got to be teenagers.
Yeah?
He did. He tried to run his stuff, and he ended up hurt. That's probably the last actual real fight I was in. Like, real. Like, you know, college was more like breaking them up.
Let's get you in one today.
Yeah, let's go.
Oh, my gosh. What is happening? Well, although I might be interesting.
we'll just go outside and be like, hey, anybody down here trying to run their stuff?
No, I don't want to be doing any of that.
Let's take this down to 97.1. Hey, Bottomer, I heard what you said about me.
I'll be standing out in the studio. Is there no one else? Is there no one else?
Wiggins, not you?
Reardon?
No, if Wiggins got a hold of you, he'd beat you up like the kid on Christmas Story.
Seriously.
He'd be crying.
He's got something in
him.
He'd
be saying, gosh darn it.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, I guess I end up being Scott Farkas in that one?
You're Scott Farkas in everyone.
I mean, I need a toady. I need that little guy to follow me around.
Yeah, you do.
Like, we'll work on that. What he said.
Oh, maybe Ben Boyd will do that.
Oh, that's perfect.
Let me see. I'm going to text him. I'm going to say, Ben, will you be my toady?
Kind of harsh.
I bet he says yes.
Let's see what we got. We have Bernie Miklas coming up in the next segment. We'll see what his views on the Bears moving to Hammond are. What's your prediction? What do you think Bernie will say?
I don't know.
I could see him
way. I'll say this. You know, Bernie grew up in Baltimore.
Ooh.
And the Colts left.
Yeah, they did.
To go to Indiana.
Oh. I think I see where this is going.
Now, again, totally different leaving a market for another geographic region than going 20 or 30 minutes away, but still.
Bernie can fight Mark Cox. Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. We have Sue Thomas with us. We have Bernie Miklas with us. Hello, Bern.
What's going on, everyone?
We're all taking bets on what your response and attitude is going to be toward the Bears moving to Hammond.
Oh, man. I think it's ridiculous. I mean, the Bears shouldn't be in Hammond, Indiana. I also know, pragmatically speaking, it's just a short hop from Chicago. It's not like they moved over three states or something. But I don't know. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't look right. But when they start playing there, the new place is open and everyone's happy and maybe the tailgating's better and all that. It'll become normalized and people won't freak out about it. Just like what happened when the Jets moved out of Shea Stadium and the Giants moved out of Yankee Stadium and they both went to New Jersey and they're both still called New York Giants, New York Jets, but they play in Jersey. They don't play in New York. Same type of thing.
Yeah. That's pretty much what we all kind of agreed on. It's stupid. Yeah. It's greed. It's what it really is. But in the end, 20 years from now, Bears fans will be fine.
Yeah. I don't think anyone will care after five, 6 years.
Yeah.
One more weird football question before we turn to the Cardinals. I don't know if you guys heard this story, but Nicole Brown Simpson's sister, Tanya, has asked the NFL to retire O.J. Simpson's number 32 across the board so that no player could ever wear it again.
Wow.
Mm. Well, that's not meant in a way to honor him, correct?
Right. But see, that's why I think it's kind of a bad idea, because we do that for great players. We don't do that to make sure that, you know.
And I really doubt many people since the murders have seen someone wearing 32 and thought, how dare you?
Yeah, is it giving him a little too much power?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. I totally agree with you guys. I mean, the way you laid it out there pretty brilliantly. Exactly. I mean, I was in a lot of NFL stadiums since that those tragic murders. I was in NFL stadiums for the next, the next 22 years. Yeah. I never once thought like, oh, is anybody on this team got number 32? You know,
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, all due respect to the Brown family. It's kind of silly. It really is.
So let's talk Cardinals. Here's a take I have as the guy in the bleachers. I think it's about to get really interesting for people like us, you guys that talk about it and understand it for a living, and guys like me who like to listen to you guys, with Newt Barr coming back. That's really going to shake up the outfield. With Crooks being up, they're going to have to make some decisions. I feel like the month of June, you know, maybe into July, that the team could look really different by July 4th.
Yeah, and we've talked about this a lot. You know, 1 through 4 in the lineup, the Cardinals have had their top four hitters in the lineup are as good as any top four in the majors. I mean, and that's a fact. But the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lineup spots have been abysmal, absolutely abysmal. In fact, in the month of May, their 5, 6, 7, 8 lineup spots were like 44% below the league average offensively. I mean, that's just almost like you laugh at it because you couldn't think it'd be that bad, but it was really that bad. So with Newt Barr coming in and Crooks, I assume Ollie Marmol is going to play him as much as he indicates to us he's going to play him. You know, all of a sudden you got two good left-handed bats in the lineup that can lengthen your lineup. Mm-hmm. You know, you put, I don't know where he's going to put Newt Barr. You bat him 5th or 6th. You bat Crooks 7th. You get Nathan Church back soon. Nathan Church is much better. He's a work in progress as a rookie hitter, but in terms of like, you know, weighted runs created plus, he is a substantial improvement over Victor Scott. So all of a sudden you got something going there. You've got an upgrade. You've got guys who are better hitters occupying most of those spots. And you can't rule out Mason Winn hitting better. And I also think if he drops Nolan Gorman down in the lineup where you get him out of the 5-hole, maybe he bats 7th or 8th, I think that takes some heat off of him and that could maybe stoke some improvement. Now, it's just a much better look now.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, we were talking about this a couple of nights ago, Byrne, Matt Pauley and I, and if you look at, let's just say the guys that are getting the opportunities, let's just say Newt and Crooks, and then eventually Nathan Church. If those three guys are all, let's just say they're average players. Well, you've now gone from wildly below average in three spots to average. That's a big upgrade. Just to be a normal, and again, there's a really good argument that any of them could be better than average moving forward. I mean, I think the idea would be if Newt's healthy, he's always been an above average player when he's been healthy, and Crooks has shown the ability to provide some left-handed power. I mean, you could get more than just average production from those spots.
I have a question.
You know, when Lars, I threw out Lars Nootbaar's offensive numbers last year because he was playing in a great deal of pain. Right. So it's just not, you know.
Right.
But let me be numbers nerd just real quick, Dave.
Yeah.
From 2022 through 2024, in terms of Lars Nootbaar's overall offensive performance, okay, 22 through 24. That's three seasons. Among players that had at least 1,000 at-bats or plate appearances over those 3 years, Lars Nootbaar was in the 74th percentile. And what that means was he was better than 74% of all the other hitters in the major leagues. And yet I've been getting grief for writing and talking about how, boy, this will be good to get him back. Oh, yeah, I'm tired of the media talking about him like he's a good hitter. He ain't no good. Yeah. He's only better than 74% of the major league hitters. Right. But yeah, good. Other than that, great point. Outstanding. Anyway.
And to continue the before Dave's question, to continue the other point, is there the way that this lineup can continue to get better, too, with Urias coming back soon. He's a guy that should play against lefties, which makes you more dangerous against lefties. And Velasquez can bring you some of that danger against lefties as well. So you actually have a really good chance with the roster moves and the return of Newt and eventually the return of Church and Urias to have a more consistent bottom half of the order, if you're, especially if you're, because Bernie, you and I have both argued against in the past platooning Nolan Gorman, but if he's not hitting righties, well, I'm not worried about his opportunities. Somebody else is going to get to play.
I agree. And, you know, I think it's been well determined it's not going to be Blaze Jordan. And I did a piece about this morning explaining why he's going to be in the minor leagues for a while. So everyone was writing out the fantasy lineups and they had Blaze Jordan in there. It's not going to be him at third base. He can't play third base very well at all. He'd be a defensive liability. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to be real. The Cardinals have moved him off of third base. And there's a reason they did that. Mm-hmm. You know, they wouldn't move him off of third base if he played it well. So anyway, Urias might be the guy. I got to be honest, though, I'm not entirely sold on him. I'm going to have to see it.
Nah, I'm with you. Yeah, I like him against lefties. I don't want to see him against a right-handed pitcher ever. I don't think that's productive.
No, I agree. But even against lefties, I mean, I'm just going to have to see more.
Yeah, that's fair.
But the potential's there for sure. The potential's there.
Okay, they taught me at WashU not to ask two questions at once, but I'm going to break that rule. Two-part question. I just saw today that Victor Scott II ranked 219 out of 222 qualified hitters in OPS Plus. I'm an athlete. I know you go up and down, but at what you guys have seen from him so far in his big league career, what confidence at all do you have that he could even creep up to league average? And my second part of my question is, in making these decisions, do front offices in general and the Cardinals in particular, how much does emotion come into it? We love this kid. The fans love this guy.
Well, I'm embarrassed to say, but although it's not my fault, I cut out there for a minute. I didn't even hear the player's name.
Victor Scott.
He's 219 out of 222 hitters, and I'm just wondering realistically how often a ball player comes back from that.
It's not going to happen. It just simply isn't going to happen. Everything in his advanced metrics profile is really, 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 really bad. In other words, there's not one thing you can point at and say, oh, okay, there's a reason why he's going to get better. There's nothing there. His performance, even from last year, and let's face it, his last year he wasn't good as a hitter, but his offensive performance from last year, his batting run value has dropped dramatically from last year. And I'll throw this in. I had this earlier this week. I wish it would have gotten more attention. Since last year, if you take his offensive performance and you take his defensive performance and you take his base running performance, since last year, compared to last year, now you're into this year, Victor Scott has lost 44% of his performance value from last year. So tell me where the yellow brick road is for that, to get back from that.
Yeah. The only way to get back from that is through an off season of extensive rebuilding your swing and changing. You're not going to do it in season. And even the offseason, right? We talk about Jordan Walker's turnaround, but Jordan Walker always had one of the most important things a hitter can have, which is elite bat speed. If you have that, you have so much. It's like a pitcher who throws 100. You always have the room for error. You have a little bit extra. Well, Victor Scott has bat speed that's probably comparable to a lot of 45-year-old retired major league players. Like he does not have bat speed, and he doesn't hit strikes, so it's a hard thing to fix.
There's just not much there. And early in the season, they were able to take some teams by surprise by having, you know, he would bunt for hits, and even he was really good at sacrifice bunts. But I tell you what, you know, the other side gets paid for using their brains, and they're like, well, wait a minute. They don't think this guy can even hit a line drive. So what, you know, we're going to take those bunts away. We're going to defend those bunts because they don't think he can hit. So this makes it easier for us to defend him in terms of the bunt, you know? And I just, you know, he's had three sacrifice bunts since the start of May.
Oh, geez.
So that even that part of the game's dried up. Last year, he got last year, Dave and Kevin and Rachel and Sue, last year, he attempted 38 steals and he got thrown out four times, right?
Right.
This year, well, let me finish. This year, he's attempted 19 steals mm-hmm. and he's already been thrown out twice as many times as he was all last year.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So on the second half of my question, does it happen all the time that teams just hold on to players way too long out of loyalty or affection, or is that just not a thing? It's a cold-hearted business.
It's got to be a cold-hearted business. I mean, if you really believe a guy's got potential, but then, you know, you go along and go along and go along and go along and nothing's happening. In fact, he gets not only worse, but he gets much worse. And you look at the metrics, there's so much information there that can tell you what you need to know. You don't even see his name. You just look at the graph meters and all that stuff. You know, you're like, well, wait a minute. There's no means of revival because he's just never going to be able to put together a swing or hit the ball hard enough to be an average hitter. And then, you know, there was some value in his defense and base running, but that's really, really plummeted, you mm-hmm. know? And I listen, man, I don't like talking like this, but I deal with the facts and the data and all that stuff. And so that's what I base it on. I mean, Victor Scott's a really good dude. He's a great dude. Yeah. But that's also irrelevant. I'm sorry. It is.
Completely agree. And look, Michael Ciani in 2024 for the Cardinals, as much as we complained, his numbers then were significantly better than Scott's numbers are now. And keep in mind that Ciani has now had 17 total at-bats in the major leagues for the last 2 years.
Wow.
So in 2025, he had 17 at-bats, and this year he has not been in the big leagues for an at-bat. And that's the level of production we're talking about. And actually, again, he's actually better in 2024 for the Cardinals than Scott's been this year by about 70 points of OPS.
And Ciani was better. You know, Victor Scott was really terrific defensively last year. Mm-hmm. It's not the case this year. A two-star catch in Major League Baseball is considered a moderately difficult catch, right?
Yep.
Last year in two-star catches, he made that catch about 73, 74% of the time, which is good. It's about average, but it was it's a little bit above average, okay? This year, those two-star catches, it's 59%. It's dropped like 15%. And I look at that and I'm like, well, how could that be?
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about like superhuman catches. We're talking about moderately difficult catches. He's not even getting to balls. He's not getting the jump. I looked at all his metrics on getting the jump. All that stuff's way down.
Yep.
I don't know why, though. I don't understand that.
Some guys bring their struggles at the plate to the field, and it must be that.
Yeah.